Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. It's an online platform for science and engineering professionals. The first offering of the platform is a public speaking course called Teach the Geek to Speak. You can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that is teachthegeek.com. Everyone, I learned about my current guest, Renate Scherzer, actually from a list of the top 40 women keynote speakers of 2020. And I actually watched her TEDx talk too. In addition to being a speaker, she's a social entrepreneur, an adjunct professor, an engineer, and an ethical design strategist. I'm interested to learn more about her company, of course, Global, what ethical design is, because I really have no clue, and if it was absolutely necessary for her to wear a red dress during her TEDx talk talking about menstruation cycles. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Renate.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. So from the bit of research that I did on you, I saw that you got a degree in biotechnology engineering. That's something I've never heard of before. So what does such a degree entail?
So basically it's a combination of learning about the human body, about our biology, and combining it with engineering skills to come up with, more sophisticated whether in the medical world, so different drugs or different inventions that look into the body and learn from it and then create something in our man-made world that is inspired by the human biology.
Oh, okay. That sounds kind of cool. What motivated you to pursue that degree?
Oh, I don't even remember that. That was so long ago. I think my dad was an engineer, so that was always in the works for me. I felt like that was a natural trajectory for me. And then biotech engineer was just like an emerging field when I started university, and there was a lot of hype about it and the future of what it could bring. So yeah, and I thought just that combination of biology and engineering was really interesting.
Yeah, but then I saw that you got a degree, master's in fine arts, which seems about as opposite of engineering as you could possibly get. What was the motivation for that?
So the motivation was that I was in the tech world for many years, and I wanted to take my knowledge in the tech world and combine it with different art or design practices and put it towards social impact, so towards helping underserved communities or environmental issues. And I was searching for where I can study that triangle, the intersection of tech, art, and social impact. And the only place in the world that I found it was in New York City in the School of Visual Arts in a program called Design for Social Innovation, and it's a master in fine arts. So that's how that came to be.
So for a number of years, as you mentioned, you worked in tech, and eventually you started a business. Was it always your goal to be self-employed?
I don't think I would have phrased it that way, but I think the entrepreneurial vibe has always been brewing in me and waiting for the right moment to kind of sprout out. I don't know if I would have said that early on, but now looking back, it's very clear to me that, yeah, being an entrepreneur is my natural way of being.
What has been the major differences between being an employee and being an entrepreneur?
Well, for once, you don't have a steady income as an entrepreneur. But on the flip side, you get to choose what you do, and you get to choose how your day looks like and what comprises your daily activities. And that's something that's super important to me. My day is always filled with so many different projects that I'm passionate about and meeting so many amazing people and being just, you know, the boss of my time and of my energy and of my focus. I think that's, for me, that's priceless.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. And then, you know, I mentioned that you have a company called, of course, Global. what services does, of course, Global provide?
Yeah, so actually after I graduated from Design for Social Innovation, I started a consultancy business that does exactly that. So we go into businesses, usually very large corporations, and we help them integrate into their practices. We help them build strategies that incorporate social impact. So helping underserved communities and helping sustainable goals and environmental goals into the core of their practice. And we do that through different creative problem solving techniques. And so it's really the definition of what I studied, which is design and business and social impact.
The majority of the business that you do with, of course, Global, is it mostly companies bringing you in because they see the benefit of what you do, or is it convincing companies that what you do is beneficial?
Yeah, such a good question. I would say it's both, definitely, but there is still such an educational curve that we as a company struggle to overcome to show companies what is the worth of investing in social impact and investing in sustainability. So the really progressive ones that have that in their agenda, in their business trajectory, they're the ones that bring us in. But for the majority of the time, we do need to proactively go and educate companies of why this is important.
What would be the pushback from the companies as to why this is not important?
Yeah, because I think the ROI is not immediate, right? You can't see the return of investment when you do good to the world immediately versus when you sell another product and your bottom line goes up, then there is a very distinct and very tangible outcome that you can measure.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And then I mentioned also that you do, you're an adjunct as well. So what type of courses do you teach?
Yeah, I teach different courses in the majority of what I teach is in Parsons in the School of Design. And I teach the same as what I do for, of course, Global, the intersection of business practices, design practices towards social impact and sustainability.
All right. I also said that I don't know what ethical design is. So could you possibly explain what that means?
Yeah, ethical design basically means not to create more things in the world that that bring waste, that exploit people, that have unintended consequences that will influence our future generations. So basically being very conscious about what we create, why we create it, and what are the implications of what we create.
Oh, okay. What's an example of that?
Yeah, so if you think of a product made out of single-use plastic, that the plastic that it's made out of will stay in probably somewhere in some ocean for 500 years and probably end up in the belly of some turtle. So the flip side of it is how can we create the same bag in a way that's either biodegradable, that's compostable, that's reusable, so those things don't happen. So that's just like in a very high level nutshell what ethical design is.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, I mentioned earlier kind of off the cuff about your TEDx talk, and I guess the part, at least you weren't wearing red shoes. But like you were standing on a red circle wearing this red dress talking about periods. It's like it kind of was applicable, I guess. What was the, I guess the,
yeah,
the
I went full on with that.
yeah, I'm guessing that was a purposeful choice. So when it came to that TEDx talk, what was the motivation for that particular topic?
Mm-hmm. So in my work, when I you know, try to create a mindset shift for companies on why they should be more ethical in the way that they create stuff, so whether it's environmentally ethically focused or with the focus to be more have equality and diversity in the people that they employ. It's really hard to explain why and how they should do it. And so by looking at nature, and especially looking at our reproductive systems, and especially looking at the female reproductive system, which is something that is so shamed on a daily basis and in our Western society, we can learn a lot of how to create an equal society. And so I think my goal with that was twofold. Was one, to kind of bring accessibility to knowledge that is not well known, and to show companies how they can use that knowledge in creating better solutions. And then on the other side is also to de-shame the female period, which is it's the source of life, but still in our Western society, it's something that is over, you know, it's usually looked at in a very bad way.
Okay, well, you know, I don't experience one of those. I don't experience myself, but I'm glad that there are women out there that do.
Without that, no one in the world would have been here. So
yeah, for sure. I never would have made that correlation between building an equal society and period. So I think that's pretty clever that you were able to do that, for sure. You know, even when it comes down to that TEDx talk, what has been the, I guess, the outcome of since you've done that TEDx talk?
Wow, so many things have happened. It's been a really pivotal moment in my career, I think. So after that, I started giving a lot of workshops in huge companies and for individuals and in universities as well, on how to incorporate the wisdom of the menstrual cycle. And I call the workshop, "What Would the Egg Do?" So learning to think from the perspective of the egg. And it has made some really interesting impact. And then in addition to that, I've just launched an exhibition that I curated that is based on an open call for artists to create something based on the wisdom of the egg. And so that just launched a month ago. So those two things, and now there's also a documentary in the works. Very early days of that, but yeah.
Wow, all of that surrounded, or all those initiatives, and all of them have to do with eggs. That's pretty impressive. Congratulations on that. Well, you know, you mentioned that you're doing a lot of workshops now, and you know, obviously workshops require, you know, public speaking. Is public speaking something that you've always been good at, or is it something you've had to improve on? And if so, how?
Yeah, I think it's a lifelong practice. I think even the best public speakers in the world are never born as, you know, as natural speakers. It's something that you train yourself and you acquire as you go. With more practice comes perfect, but it's definitely something that I've always loved doing. And it's really interesting because before the TEDx talk, we had a mentor that was assigned to each one of the speakers. And he was with me for 3 months, really mentoring me daily on how to speak on such a huge stage, which is something I've never done. There were 1,600 people in the audience. And that's something that I've never had the experience to speak in front of so many people. And just that experience of learning from him every day of how to do it, how to stand, how to use your voice, how to move around, how to remember so many words. So the whole talk is 16 minutes. It's 16 minutes of remembering by heart every single word. And so specifically for that TEDx talk, there was a lot of work that was done to get me up to that level. Definitely not something that I did before.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize you had to memorize. You really memorized every word that you said during that 16 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. good for you. When it comes to the presentations that you have to do, do you have a process for putting them together? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, I always look for the story. I think people remember stories a lot better than they remember facts or numbers or bullet points. So whenever I create a workshop or a talk, I always look for what is the overarching narrative that I want to tell, and then build all the facts and all the data into it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I'm a big fan of that too. Not, I wasn't initially though. When I first started giving presentations, especially in tech, you don't think stories, but I don't think it really matters what forum you're in. People remember, as you said, people remember stories better than just, you know, facts and a technical jargon, that kind of thing. They kind of, especially if you're talking to people who are outside of your field.
I think that, you know, as you said, the industry doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's tech, if it's finance, if it's, law or, history. As long as there are stories, people will remember the content a lot better.
For sure. Do you ever get nervous before giving a presentation? And if so, how do you deal with your nerves?
Every time, every single time. I get super nervous all the time. And how do I deal with it? I think a lot of breathing and meditation and some power moves. So standing up tall and just stretching my arms.
Before. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, I've heard of those power moves. Maybe I'll try them sometime. I heard one you put your hands on your shoulder or your hips like that, like Superman. But hey, whatever works, exactly. You know. But when it comes to nerves, please go ahead.
Sorry.
Sorry. I thought you were saying something. I didn't want to talk over you. But yeah, when it comes to nerves, I'm a big fan of, or a big believer in, if you're not nervous, then you probably don't care about what you're talking about. So having nerves is nervous.
Yeah, that is 100% true. So yeah, on that front, I'm so happy that I'm still nervous every time.
Yeah, and I think the audience kind of notices too. And not only that, but I think people kind of are forgiving when it comes to nerves too, because, you know, everyone kind of, I'd be hard pressed to think of anybody who doesn't get a little nervous before getting up in front of a bunch of people, especially if they're people you don't know talking about, you know, just talking. And it certainly can be nerve wracking. But you've already provided quite a number of tips for people in terms of getting better at public speaking, like for instance, keeping stories in mind when putting presentations together, and also, you know, the power moves and breathing and meditation. Do you have any other tips that could be helpful for people who want to become more effective in public speaking?
Yeah, I think what really helped me before the TEDx talk is, what I did was I recorded myself speaking the whole talk, and then I would just listen to it all the time. I would go for walks on the beach in the morning and listen to it. I would do the dishes and listen to it. I would, just be around the house doing stuff and listen to it. And this is maybe one of the most powerful tools I've learned, if you need to memorize. So the brain actually doesn't really know if you're actually speaking it or hearing it, especially when it's your voice. So just recording yourself and listening to it over and over again, that would be my number one tip for memorizing something.
Yeah, I think that's a great tip too when it comes to getting better in public speaking, because you can do it in the moment, but then you likely won't remember all the things you did well and the things that you need to improve on, just, you know, based off of memory. But if you go back and look at the video of you doing it, then at least you have it's memorialized. So you can definitely see, okay, I did this well, I'm gonna keep doing that, but then this other thing, this is something I need to improve on. So I firmly agree with you when it comes to recording yourself.
That's actually something that I also did before the TED talk. I recorded myself on video and I looked mainly at my posture and how I use my hands. And I learned a lot about what works, what doesn't work in regards to the body language through the video.
Yeah, I can attest that with the TEDx talk, it didn't look like you were slouching. So good job on that one. You know, we're in different times now with the pandemic, How has coronavirus affected, of course, global?
Yeah, I think it put a halt on a lot of things, and especially people are less inclined to invest in something that doesn't have, as we said, the immediate ROI. But on the other side, on the flip side, people are a lot more open because it may, you know, COVID is a clear mark that business as usual is no longer working. It's not the way that we've been operating in the world is no longer working. And it's, if you saw my TED talk, then you know that, like, I talk about the wisdom of the egg, and COVID has given us a real big opportunity to practice that, more receptive and intuitive and less frantically running kind of, yeah, way of being. So on that front, I think COVID has done some good for my message.
Wonderful. Yeah, and hopefully people heed the advice of the egg.
Yeah.
This has been really interesting talking to you, Renette. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about what you're working on?
Yeah, so there's the exhibition, there are the workshops, there's the work in, of course, Global. And you can share with them the links. I would love that. And anyone that is out, that is an artist and wants to participate in the exhibition, the open call is still open.
All right, wonderful. How can people get in touch with you?
So just hello@ofcourseglobal.com or through LinkedIn.
Okay. Excellent. Well, everybody, this marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek. It's an online platform for science and engineering professionals. The first offering is a public speaking course called Teach the Geek to Speak. You can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that is teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thank you, Renette.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.